Welcome to podcast 122 of Breakout Culture. I'm Ed Vasey, the culture editor of Country and Townhouse magazine.
And I'm Charlotte Metcalf, and I'm the associate editor at the magazine. And today we're talking about how culture is responding to climate change, because a new show has just opened at the Hayward Gallery on London's South Bank that represents a coming together of 15 global artists to respond to the crisis our planet is facing. The show is called Dear Earth, Art and Hope in a Time of Crisis. I saw the show yesterday. And its aim is to inspire political and social activism, as well as joy and empathy.
Rachel Thomas has been the chief curator at the Hayward since April 2022, working closely alongside the director, Ralph Rugoff, and we're delighted to welcome her onto the podcast. Hello, Rachel.
Hello, Ed. Thank you so much for having me on today. Really appreciate it.
It's a great pleasure. Also with us today, we're lucky enough to have two of the artists exhibiting in the show. The artist team, Heather Aykroyd and Dan Harvey, known amazingly as Aykroyd and Harvey. The duo is internationally acclaimed for creating work that intersects art, activism, architecture, biology, ecology and history. Phew. So we're looking forward to hearing all about how they do that. Hello, Heather and Dan.
Hello. Very nice to be here and talk.
Yeah, hello there.
Well, it's lovely to have you all on. Now, can we start with you, Rachel? Tell us what the inspiration was for the show, because it was inspired by the multidisciplinary Nigerian-born artist Otobong Nakanga, if I pronounce that right, whose artworks are in the opening room of the exhibition. She says that to care is a form of resistance. So tell us what she means by that and how the show is going to extend that thought.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll take you on a journey there. So it's my first show at the Hayward Gallery as chief curator. I wanted to look at the climate change in a different way. So it very much came from conversations with poets, writers, looking at culture, how we interpret culture and the climate change that wasn't putting people off or hard statistics, that actually was a way forward that could connect and a personal way forward that really had a sense of compassion. So amongst these very many conversations I spoke to Otobong Nakanga. And we were looking at how kind of artwork today really does question climate change, really questions our place in the world, our responsibility. And we didn't want to have this show that shied away from hard issues, because it is a hard issue. We're in the middle of it. We're in the middle of an apocalypse. But how do we go forward? So we were talking about care as a form of resistance to heal, to repair, to fall back in love with our planet, but also to acknowledge what is going on with climate justice, all these hard-hitting issues, but in a way that could be welcoming and to inspire a conversation. So the show, which is on until September the 3rd, please do come, has installations, has paintings, has reflections, has Indigenous art. And I really wanted to do a show that wasn't an encyclopedia history of it, but actually through the artistic lens that the artists are asking us to inviting the audience to re-question, reframe on a spiritual, psychological, green tech ways, all these different ways of how we can look at the climate change. And one of the things that came out is that there are so many great people doing work that aren't recognised. And we should actually recognise people that are doing the great work so people can see them for themselves. If you see a mirror of somebody doing it, you say, well, I can do that, that you haven't lost hope. Because we do need hope in these times. There is not one path forward that we can go. There's actually many paths. And I think this show sparks the imagination.
Well, let's go on to you now, Aykroyd and Harvey, and tell us about these wonderful portraits that you've done out of grass seed. Just tell our listeners what they're going to see. They are very beautiful. They're all silvery and green and lovely.
The images, they're grown entirely in the dark, but we use very large analog projectors and we project a negative image onto the grass as it's growing. So over a period of 2 weeks, we were projecting within the project space at the Hayward. The only light they receive is from the projector. So where the strong light falls, the grass produces the chlorophyll, the green pigment, through photosynthesis. Where there's less light, it produces less green pigment. Where there's no light, it grows, but is bright yellow. So you get a tonal range rather like a black and white photograph, but from very dark green to a luminous yellow.
Dan and I first worked together in 1990. We were growing grass up the walls of this vaulted ceiling chamber room in northern Italy. And we left a ladder against one of the walls of the vertically grown grass. And there was directional light just from one window. And at one point we had to move the ladder. And as we moved it, we were seeing this yellow imprint. And, you know, we were looking at it and we were a bit puzzled. We were going, well, what is that? What's going on? But then we began to understand that where the grass had been denied light, it was yellow. So the idea was seeded into our imagination to try and project an image onto a wall of seedling grass as it grew. It's very exquisite. This is, you know, this is the beauty of chlorophyll. And I think what Dan and I have done, I feel what we have grown and created with this wonderful community of people that we've been working with to actually make the portraits. I think we've finessed, we've worked very, very hard, you know.
So, and who are the portraits of?
There are five. And these are people who are all active with collectives or campaign groups. They are co-founders of campaign groups and collectives. So even though they're individual portraits, they very much are with their communities and with their groups. They're all actually London collectives. Grow Lewisham, which is kind of working at permaculture and trying to open up more and more spaces in Lewisham for public access to grow food, permaculture restoring degraded soil. We have River Roading Trust and Lawyers for Nature. We have London Free, which is creating a wetland on the River Roading up in Barking. We have London Freedom Seed Bank, which is actually building an urban seed commons and distributing London-grown, climate-adapted seed for free. And we also have two wonderful activists who live in and around the South Circular, Live and Breathe and Choked Up. And they have been very much saying, we need clean air. The air is not breathable. It's causing terrible distress, illness and sickness. And in case of a young girl, death. And it's disproportionately affecting Black and brown Londoners.
You were talking about the rivers being polluted and everything. There are some the photographs that you're using in the poster for the exhibition are absolutely stunningly beautiful, even though they're showing how pipes and drilling and things have absolutely ruined parts of Peru, and they're by Richard Moss. Tell us a bit about what we're going to see from him, Rachel.
Yeah, Richard Moss very kindly gives us a new commission where he's filmed the Amazon and the tribal people there, that he's turned it around where they know they're being filmed and they're saying, we need help. And then we have these beautiful photographs which show a terrible beauty. The terrible beauty of destruction of what's going on. So you see these forests, and they're almost done in the camera that's using ecological kind of camera. So it's like bright oranges, bright reds, bright pinks, almost like this subterranean mystical world. But actually they're showing oil slicks, or the damage of pollution from all these kind of toxic kind of chemical companies that are using and cutting down the forest. So it is this like an idea of the terrible beauty. That's by man. And I think the whole point of the show is to say, well, this is our responsibility, but, you know, not for us to get frightened by it or to get eco-anxiety. It's just to say, well, what do we want to do with that? I think a lot of people have told me some of the show is very fearless, but very beautiful. Very spiritual, very magical. But I think I had to show Richard there to show the reality that's impacting on our fellow humans as well. And actually, it's a call for help.
And at the centre of it all is the Agnes Dennis Pyramid. Tell us about that.
Agnes Dennis, where do I start? She is one of the leading pioneers, eco-activism, feminist, social, political warrior, everything. Agnes very much started her career.
Old. She's 90.
She's 93 and she's fearless.
Wow.
She tells me off. I tell you what, she says, Rachel, send me pitch that pyramid every day. So Agnes very much questions our place in the world. The capitalism, the sense of money, the exchange, what are we losing from the animals, from the birds? I mean, her earliest work as a teenager is when she drew the birds, actually, and saying, look at this extinction. We have to capture time. We have to look after things. And the huge, huge pyramid we have, please come and see it. It's very meditative. For the first time, we've built this living pyramid that Agnes usually shows outside, inside the Hayward Gallery. So you can come, you can look at this. But it's meant to be a mirror of our reflection of something that's growing and living, and actually that we need to look after. So it's almost like saying, you know, can we help? What do we need to do? What's our responsibility? We've also got Agnes's drawings of flora, flowers, sea creatures, and her pyramids. She very much is the godmother of the show. So, and because she said in the 70s when she did all this eco art, she very much was set aside. because the canon then in an art was if you're a female doing ecological art, you were not actually respected or actually didn't gain much traction. So she says it's ironic now that she's having a first retrospective 2 years ago at the Shed. She's being kind of celebrated. So I think it's really good to actually uplift artists like Agnes and say, no, you are actually one of the leading artists, and show that alongside the younger generations and the artists.
Did she turn up to the opening?
Unfortunately, she's in a wheelchair in New York, but she very much is in spirit. And like I say, I speak to her often and she's delighted. And she's working in Abu Dhabi as well. She's doing some pyramids there as well. So she's fearless and I really respect that.
And talking about birds, you've done a sculpture in collaboration with London Zoo.
We have the artist Jenny Kendler, who's also an eco-activist, wanted, and she very much has a great way of looking that of compassion. We've fallen out of love with our planet. And to have a kind of connection back to the birds and connection back to a kind of, you know, fellow souls. So what she's done is she's done these 100 eyes of birds, all different sizes. It's amazing. And the birds are actually, there's a plan, so the children or families, anyone can look at these birds. But some of them are extinct. Some of them are actually going extinct. So people can understand the sense of death or mourning or actually going into extinction. There's also a second piece that you speak into and you're meant to say your worst confession or your best confession.
Why don't we could try that now?
We could try. If you speak into it, then you'll hear the sound of a British bird that's nearly going on the extinct list, kind of repeating back to you. It's a very beautiful piece of, again, a conversation between interspecies.
I love that. Of course, none of this is... This is a brilliant exhibition, but the Haywood already has a track record. I hadn't appreciated that your pop-up garden on the roof, which was commissioned by Grounded Ecotherapy 11 years ago, is now an ongoing project and apparently has more wild indigenous plants than any other roof terrace in the world.
250 species, yeah. So we were told by the head gardener there.
Yeah, Paul is great in Grounded Ecotherapy, and that's why we wanted to celebrate him as part of the show, to again show that good work, because it's a way of hope, and sometimes it's slow hope that you can kind of do to actually start and look what's in front of your eyes. So when I first came, I thought, gosh, Paul is doing this great work with Grounded Ecotherapy. So we've kind of connected him into the catalogue and to the show and to celebrate his practice.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely beautiful, that garden. It's got a lovely coffee place up there. It's just gorgeous.
And also, I think Aykroyd and Harvey as well, you've done stuff with the National Theatre, as well as obviously with the David Attenborough building in Cambridge, working with Cambridge's Museum of Zoology, and the Olympic Park as well. So you're a kind of well-established interventionist in this respect.
Yeah, I don't think the National Theatre piece is one we'd repeat, is it, Dan, now, at our tender ages?
No, we drew the two faces of the fly tower, and it was actually postponed because of a drought the year before we grew it.
2006, it was postponed.
I think they felt that they couldn't have the lovies, as they said, on the South Bank, watering this beautiful green lawn when Hyde Park was completely parched. But what we actually did do is we found a water supply into the basement of the National Theatre that was actually being pumped out, and we had it tested. It wasn't good to drink, but it was fine for irrigation. And we installed a big pump in their basement. And that water now actually runs the whole of their grey water system in the National Theatre. So it made a lasting change to the building too.
Amazing. I mean, I think what's so interesting about this exhibition is listening to you talk a lot about responsibility, Rachel, and there's an amazing exhibit at the centre of this as well, which is a film by Cornelia Parker, where she's with two screens, where she's interviewed lots of young children. It's called Sixes and Sevens, because that's the age she's talking to, and also a reference to how upside down the world seems to be at the moment. And it's so moving. Just tell us a bit about that film, because it's absolutely gripping. I mean, you can't leave it when you start watching it.
Yeah, another great work for the show that's a new commission as well. So working with Cornelia, we wanted to look at something very important, that many of these kind of shows on ecological kind of comments don't show children. And ultimately, there's a lot of eco-anxiety. I mean, with younger people now, the younger generations, this is on their minds. This is a central thing. Cornelia wanted to say, well, her idea was, let's get the children talking from a diverse background. And she's called it The Future at Sixes at Sevens. And I laughed, I cried. I mean, I think it's a standout piece as well, that they talk about their hopes, their fears. It's really funny. A lot a lot of them know a lot more than us about the climate change, I have to say. And it's really brilliant imaginative responses of what the future might be like, good for better and for worse. And it ends really well. I won't give away the ending because it's just so poignant. But it's a stunning work that makes us think. It's very poignant and it's reflective of our time. And I think it'd be interesting in 20 years' time, Charlotte and Ed and Dan and Heather, we should catch up again and maybe reflect on this, because I think it'd be very interesting to kind of go back and see where we have gone.
Yeah, I know that it's just a wonderful piece of work. And now tell us about the work that heralds visitors into the Hayward Gallery, which is John Gerrard's Flag, because that's going to be used in U2's first live concert in 4 years in Las Vegas later in the year, isn't it?
John Gerrard was part of our commissioning committee at the Hayward Gallery, allow us to do big scale sculptures across the campus of South Bank Centre. So we're really delighted to show this. And we wanted to herald a way of beckoning people in, that it was a kind of a flag, literally a flag, a symbol of climate change. So John has done a triptych series of flags very successfully, which connect to environmental issues that usher in what do we need to discuss from different kind of continents and why. And so we've got a beautiful flag of plumes, which is like water vapour, and it's filmed in Arizona, where he's questioning the kind of mining, the kind of looking back at like what we've done to our planet, and actually showing that back in this flag made of literally water vapours. It's amazing. You actually think you can see it because it's done with gaming technology. So you can see it from miles away, and it's also connected to Arizona time. So you can see the nightfall and the sunset. But the whole point of this work, Surrender, it's to surrender is to parley, is to have a conversation. And I think this work is saying, stop, we need to surrender our ways. Let's have a cultural conversation where artists can lead this and they can maybe start a conversation of hope. And if you have hope, then you have change. Because I actually started very much the research of looking at all these climate scientists that said, look, the only way you're going to solve climate crisis is by, you know, statistics and information, and science will solve it. Then one of the great thinkers came back and said, well, actually, no, we're not. The only way you're going to change it, because people are selfish, is through spiritual enlightenment and a change of attitude. And it has to be personal. So Heather and Dan, so you have these amazing five huge portraits. So imagine the old fashioned portraits that you'd have of like great figures standing in oil. Well, forget that. These are amazing figures that are done in grass portraits that you look at them and they are arresting, because you feel these portraits are fabric. They're almost like pieces of fabric and you feel they're 3D. And it's only when you go close to them, they're made of grass. And then opposite, we have Aluwai Kukaman, an indigenous artist from Taiwan. It was a bright red fabric work. So it really is a kind of a very startling room.
We ask people to look directly into the camera, so there's a very clear engagement. I'm here. You are here. That sense of a shared moment of both being witness to where we're at this point. So I kind of feel that there's that dynamic. Somebody also said to me last night, they said the vibrations in this room are very, very special. And I could feel it because the room is quite lowly lit. It has a slightly, I want to say the word sepulchre. Is that how you pronounce
it? Yes, it's quite ghostly. I mean, your portraits look, especially in contrast with her bright scarlet, vivid works, they look rather wonderful and ghostly, I think.
The image is on a molecular level. There's no application of any dye. It is through the life force of that material that image manifests. So it literally grows. It's like a very, very slow exposure. And actually, to show the pieces for a number of weeks or months, as we are at the Hayward, we have to dry the pieces. So we sometimes say, here we are nurturing and caring for the grass, and then we go into a process of rapidly killing it. So they are now in the throes of dying, but the image is still held. And I think we can sometimes talk about life force. Sometimes Dan and I also talk about the death force. But it's there. It's held within the chlorophyll pigment. And that's why they're like apparitions.
I think there's something wonderful about chlorophyll, is the fact that without photosynthesis, we wouldn't have life as we know it on this planet. We wouldn't have the atmosphere that we have. We wouldn't have fossil fuels either. So it's a fundamental sort of process. And I think a lot of our work sort of comes about through observing nature and trying to understand it. And One thing that I find really positive is nature is so strong. If we stop extracting from it and we actually do start to care for it, it can come back and it will come back. So for me, that's a very positive thing.
Like seagrasses, you know, the kind of the oceanographers and the people, the biologists who are working with kelps and seaweeds and seagrasses, you know, a kind of an acre of seagrass will absorb 4 times as much carbon dioxide as an equivalent acre of Amazonian forest. And again, you know, there's this whole sea world, this extraordinary world of water. And, you know, I mean, obviously we're drawn towards the seagrasses, but, you know, and also they're phenomenally important for, you know, for the life cycles of many, you know, marine dwelling creatures. And I just sort of think, actually, how magical that these grasses are drawing out carbon dioxide, but producing, you know, oxygen for us to breathe and being these nurseries for all these like fishes and creatures. And it's like bringing the magic, it's bringing the magical back, the sense of wonder. And I really feel that a lot of the eco-anxiety our children and adults feel was, you know, it's what David Attenborough does. Yes, we worked, we had the pleasure of working at the Attenborough building. We met him, which was just a joy. Straight in, he was asking these great questions, completely engaged. He brings wonder and he brings a sense of reveal and discovery and he brings hope. I mean, they also show what we are losing, and none of us can underplay that because it is dire, but we can still sit within these stories. And I think, you know, we are by nature, I really think we prefer to go forward with hope in our hearts and than to feel it's game over, to be honest.
Well, that's a very good place to start ending on. And, but just before we let you go, Rachel, when you set out to commission all these artists and find the 15 artists who were going to show, were you surprised by just how many artists there were out there responding to climate change? Or did you have to sort of seek them out?
Yeah, no. Well, I think artists have always responded in different ways to climate change. But I think when I was really digging deep and researching, it was really good to go local and global and actually see how much amazing work is being done and actually what the message is. And it's quite interesting. I think artists are the shamans. They're the weather vanes. They predict the future of what's going to happen. And just to kind of look on that note with Heather and Dan, Alawai did this amazing embroidery work that you'll see from the ancestors. And it was done because of a typhoon in Taiwan where she was displaced and many of the women were displaced there. So they did this work as a kind of showing the trauma. And when I met her, we were installing, she was, I have to change the work now, Rachel, from, because obviously the climate has ruined what's happened and we've lost so many lives and we've been displaced. But actually now I want to look at from trauma to hope and resilience, to look at rebuilding. And I do think that's the message. So I do think this is a really interesting time because we are at the centre of an ecological turn in the arts as well. And there's many shows covering this, but I do think it's important to capture this now, but not forget, and to keep building on this. So we have slow hope going forward as well.
Oh, it's a wonderful show and really, really interesting. It's not like anything else you're going to see in London. So do go. It's on until September the 3rd or the 9th. When's it
the
on?
The 3rd.
Until...
And the we're third. Having a closing panel and a closing ceremony. I think that includes yoga around the big pyramid, Ed. So you're invited, and Charlotte, you can come along. So we'll be having talks and a closing ceremony as well for the show.
Fantastic. Well, thank you all so much for coming on and telling us about it. It's absolutely fascinating.
Really enjoyed the talk. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the invite.
Next week will be our last podcast of the summer. And we're going to be talking about two really beautiful summer gardens full of wonderful art to visit. First, in Buckinghamshire, there's Wadston Manor, the Renaissance-style chateau built by Baron Ferdinand Rothschild in the late 19th century, now owned by the National Trust and managed by the Rothschild Foundation. Apart from the house and gardens being glorious to visit in their own right, there are two wonderful exhibits on this summer. Joanna Vasconcelos's spectacular 12-metre-high ceramic wedding cake sculpture. And in the house and in the coach house, there's an exhibition of Catherine Goodman's new work, in particular, her monumental frieze of 7 canvases inspired by Corfu. Then Wakehurst Kew in Sussex is the location for the UK's largest and epic art installation by Catherine Nelson, which wraps around the 16th century mansion. And there's also going to be a big exhibition of different artists' work inspired by trees called Rooted. That's on all over the summer, so it's the perfect time to visit both places.
tune in next week to hear all about them.
That's it for another episode of Breakout Culture, but please don't forget to visit countryandtownhouse.com, where you'll find the latest edition of the magazine and our sister podcast, House Guest with Carol Annette, in which she talks to some of the most fascinating and influential names in interior design. If you enjoyed today, please make sure you follow us or subscribe. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, we'd love you to leave us a rating and a review, as it really helps others to find the show. And if there's anything at all in the arts and culture landscape you think we should be talking about or investigating, please send me an email to charlotte@countryandtownhouse.co.uk. And don't forget to follow Country and Townhouse on social media. You can find the links to all our accounts in the podcast show notes. We'll be back on air with a new podcast at the same time next Friday. Have a lovely weekend. Goodbye.